From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. It's always good to have my guest, documentary filmmaker Joe Berlinger, with us. He was most recently here for his film Crude, but of course we know him for, I guess, last year, you're an Oscar nominee for the third of the Paradise Lost films. Is that right, Joe?
Yes. Finally, the Oscar team smiled upon us.
Well, you should have had a long time ago. His other films, of course, include Brother's Keeper and Some Kind of Monster. He's been here many times. He's back for his newest film, Under African Skies, a look at the controversy surrounding Paul Simon's Graceland album. 2011 was the album's 25th anniversary. You know, I just thought about something you said when you were last here talking about Crude, and you talked about, you know, in those jungles, basically all the area around the Amazon, you talked about white people treating indigenous people abysmally, which kind of connects to the whole controversy around Graceland, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, that depends on your perspective. You know, I think the film, you know, Under African Skies explores the controversy without really taking sides. And, you know, some people felt that Paul should not have gone to South Africa to record this record. And on the other hand, you know, the artistic achievement has long outlived the political controversy. And I personally believe that the record had a lot to do with kind of mobilizing people's attention about the cause, even though that was not necessarily his purpose going into it. I think it's a very complex issue. And, you know, for me, the record was just one of this, you know, it's one of my all-time favorite records. It's like one of my go-to records when I'm feeling down and want to lift my mood. And just the opportunity to explore the dissection of that music was the other reason I wanted to do this film, because it was pretty breakthrough what he did, which we can get into later. But, you know, the way he went about recording the music and what its influence on world music was pretty profound. So to me, it was just an interesting opportunity to tell the political story and also to tell the kind of the musical historical story.
It falls into this thing, and I like to talk to you about the thematic lines that run through your work. And so much what you do as a filmmaker sort of deals with history and the present, some of these cultural and political cuts between an era in which something happened and the present day kind of ramifications of that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just, the passage of time is just a theme that has preoccupied me. You know, most notably, you see in, you know, Paradise Lost 3, to make that movie, we looked at footage that we had discarded and thought was not relevant from Paradise Lost 1, and with the passage of time, it gains new relevance. Same thing with this story. You know, at the time, the record was hugely controversial. People today don't even remember there was a controversy, but people remember these songs quite dearly. And one of the ironies, you know, when I was 25 is when this record came out, the Graceland, and I remember immediately loving the record, but I also was very much a part of the anti-apartheid movement and very supportive and participated in the anti-apartheid movement. And I remember all the criticism directed at this, at the recording of this record, and I never understood the criticism, really, because what Paul was trying to do was, he was trying to export to the world the very culture that the apartheid regime was trying to extinguish. You know, Paul was trying to, through the tour and the record, you know, put a human face on apartheid to make these people, these oppressed people, three-dimensional. And the very definition of apartheid is to dehumanize and to make these people, meaning black South Africans, two-dimensional. But people forget this controversy, and with the passage of time, all we remember is the record. And I find that fascinating, you know, how easily we forget, and yet it was so recent.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. Always thrilled to have Joe Berlinger here. He's back to talk about his new film, Under African Skies, a look at the controversy surrounding the recording of the Paul Simon Graceland album. I have to be honest with you, and this is a rare case for me on this show. I don't really know the record because I never bought it. Because I did so buy into that. And as you were talking about Simon's attitudes. In the film, he says that he asked for Harry Belafonte's advice. Belafonte told him he should check in with the ANC, the African National Congress, and he thought it wasn't bad advice, but it was kind of like taking advice from your dad.
Well, I think what he was trying to say in that particular quote was Harry was basically telling him to, you know, seek the approval, and he felt that he, you know, like he said in the movie, you know, like it's like kind of like you want to go on a date and your dad tells you not to take the car, but you want to go out on the date, so you take the car anyway.
Sure.
I think he was just saying, look, he was just, you know, he loved that music. He was handed a cassette tape. You know, this is, again, before, you know, the world was a very different place in terms of both popularizing this music, which today could have been done through, you know, YouTube, and also finding out the source of music. He was handed a cassette tape of the Boyoyo Boys, of this accordion jive music, you know, this township jive music that was popular in Soweto and in the various townships. And he just fell in love with it and wanted to find out who recorded it, and wanted to, instead of just hiring session musicians in New York and copying that style, he wanted to go to the source. And when people tried to dissuade him, he just, you know, he just wanted to follow his artistic muse. Some people took that as an arrogant flouting of the cultural boycott. And, you know, but I happen to feel this record was never made. It would have been, you know, a shame, because it has entertained many. It has inspired many. It put certain groups like Ladysmith Black Mambazo on the map. And yet at the time, you know, there was a cultural boycott. And, you know, the whole question of boycotts are something to ponder, because boycotts often hurt the people they're designed to help. I mean, part of this boycott was that South African musicians were not allowed to travel, and Paul decided to break that rule. And he went on tour with this record and brought South Africans with him. And I'm glad he did, you know, but I can also understand the point of view that, you know, he wasn't following the rules of the political party.
But I just thought that was funny, that moment where it was not to his advantage to invest himself too much in the politics, because that's also not what a rock artist does. You know, you don't want to align yourself with the institutional behavior. And it was like he's also, at that point, he was in his 40s, and he still had wanted to position himself as kind of a rock and roll rebel. So he eschewed some advice that it might not have hurt him to follow.
You know, it's been misinterpreted as arrogance. I just think he believes, you know, that the artist should not follow any dictates of society, because politicians routinely use artists and discard them. That, you know, that's his attitude.
But sure, there's a big controversy in that period where Ronald Reagan had appropriated Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA, and Springsteen came out and took a stand and said he didn't want that to be the case.
Exactly. And, you know, certainly Clinton, you know, wrapped himself up in Fleetwood Mac, you know, so politicians, you know, tend to use the artist and move on. That's Paul's position. You know, on the other hand, if you're dying in the streets of Soweto and fighting for a liberation movement, I can see the argument that what he did was wrong. And yet what he did was very helpful, I think, to the movement. That Graceland tour mobilized a lot of people. That Graceland tour taught a lot of people about the beauty of the culture of South Africa, and created a whole new category of music for people, and which on the one level might sound frivolous, but at the time of revolution, I think it was one of the many helpful tools. And so his point is, you know, there's a rigidity to political parties, and political parties are self-interested, and the artist should not supplicate themselves to the political party. But I understand both sides of the argument, which is why the film really doesn't take a position.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm agreeing to disagree with Joe Berlinger. He's the director of the new documentary, Under African Skies, a look at the controversy around the Paul Simon album, Graceland. One of the things I always thought was kind of problematic about that is that obviously all the songs in Graceland are much better than I Ain't Gonna Play Sun City. Those are great songs as compared to the protest songs, which, as he points out here, you know, it's tough to write protest songs and really make them feel like they're part of the firmament and not just protest songs. And he admits that that was both not an interest of his and not something he thought he could really do that well. So he just chose to take another tack altogether.
Well, you know, his purpose wasn't to go tell their story. His purpose was to create kind of a new musical style, to fuse African sounds with his own kind of pop sensibility. And, you know, I think Peter Gabriel in the film, who wrote the incredible song Biko, which was a powerful protest song, but even that song feels extremely dated. You know, Gabriel in the movie talks about how what Graceland did was to teach people that Africa isn't just about sorrow, suffering, and it's a basket case. You know, it celebrated this incredibly rich culture, which had been marginalized prior to Graceland. And, you know, you can't tell an artist, you know, to write a particular song style. I mean, this is, you know, Paul Simon is one of the great songwriters of the 20th century, 21st century, whatever century we're in, of modern times. And, you know, he has a certain style. And this record, you know, was kind of a breakthrough for him in terms of instead of writing a song in advance and then recording it, he kind of discovered sounds as he went along, assembled these instrumental backing tracks, and then wrote a song on top of it, you know, putting a layer of his own American pop sensibility on top of it. And for him, that was kind of a breakthrough. He had dabbled in that style with select songs before, like with Mother and Child Reunion.
And Loves When You Like Hurrah.
Yeah. You know, exactly, going to the source of ska. El Condor Pasa was a song that used a Peruvian folk instrumental track, but never to do an entire album in this way. And, you know, we take for granted, you know, because of Pro Tools, you know, and the whole hip-hop movement is about assembling other sounds and then laying your own sensibility on top of it. You know, we kind of take that for granted today. But the way Simon did that record in 1985 was kind of a breakthrough for the industry and for him. And so I don't think his mission was, you know, he wasn't there to write protest songs. That's not what he was about. He wasn't there to tell their story. He was there to kind of create this new fusion of African and American pop music, and it worked.
It's interesting, too, is that you bring up hip-hop, because sampling was just starting to become known by people at that time, and it started to ask that question about proprietorship over people bringing other idioms into their own kind of musicianship. And I remember that being part of the conversation, too. I think it brought something into the center of the mainstream that had basically only been, I guess, worked at around the periphery before that.
You know, I mean, one of the big criticisms leveled at him and this record was not just that he had broken the UN cultural boycott, but also that he was appropriating black music and basically stealing it. And that's an age-old argument, you know, like as Paul McCartney says in the film, basically the Beatles were recycling Motown, taking black music, recycling it, putting their own spin on it, and recycling it back to white Americans. And it's an age-old argument. But, you know, to me, it's like it takes a Paul Simon to make a Graceland. You know, it takes an Elvis Presley to take that kind of music and take it to the next level. It takes a Beatles. He put his own spin on it. He rearranged the music. He put his own personality into it. So to me, that is what music is about. American rock and roll has its roots in African music, but then American rock and roll went back to Africa, you know, in this century, and greatly influenced African musicians. And then that came back to America in different forms. And so it's like an endless cycle of musical styles, you know, re-inspiring its original source.
We'll take a break. My guest is Joe Berlinger. His new film as director is Under African Skies, a look at the controversy around the recording of the Paul Simon album Graceland. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
Welcome back to The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. I'm welcoming back Joe Berlinger, whose films include Some Kind of Monster, Crude, of course, the Paradise Lost films. His newest film as director is Under African Skies, a look at Paul Simon's work on the album Graceland. As you were talking just before the break, you reminded me of what Dr. Dre did with Eminem. He basically wanted to find the hip-hop version of Elvis Presley. And this, you know, Fela heard the music of James Brown and brought those kinds of rhythms to African pop. You talked about Scott a little bit with the Paul Simon, touching on that before too. And there was this kind of conversation, but hearing Paul McCartney talk about the Beatles covering Motown songs reminded me that the Beatles' first label in America was VJ, which is owned by a black woman. I mean, there's so much fascinating history in all this stuff that it must be really fun for you to be able to blend both the political and the cultural in something.
Well, I mean, this film was really quite a thrill for me to make because I have very eclectic musical taste. Look, I did the Metallica film, so that should tell you something. But this Graceland record was always an album that really appealed to me. It always has. And the political story always intrigued me. And it was an opportunity to tell, you know, both of these stories and to really dissect the musical story, which I think is actually a more important part of the film than the political story. The reason I enjoyed making this film is that it allowed me to do what I like to do in music films. Basically, after the Metallica film, which was about these guys going into therapy and the process of making a record, to me, it was, you know, very much about the vicissitudes of fame and fortune, and then there was a deeper story to tell as opposed to just filming music. You know, I like to listen to music and I like to watch films, and I think a lot of music films suffer from just being a filmed record of music making. And to me, that's not the kind of music film I'm interested in. I want to tell a deeper story if music is going to be involved. And so this was a great opportunity to tell, you know, to kind of juggle two complex storylines, which has a deep roots in the historical past. And, you know, it was a great challenge and a great opportunity. And going back to South Africa with Paul and meeting these musicians, I mean, these musicians are just have the biggest hearts, are so full of joy. And for all of them, the recording of this record was kind of a seminal event in their lives, not because it made them more famous or they made money or anything like that, just it was such an important thing for them to stand up and be counted as individuals and to make a statement in their own way and to resist the call for them to not go out on the road. This was a hugely important moment in their lives, and they dropped everything to be in this film. You know, they had such enthusiasm for the project. It just was really quite touching how important this record 25 years ago was to them.
It's amazing, too, because the normally doer Paul Simon is just lifted literally and figuratively when these guys come in the room.
Even though he hadn't been in touch with a lot of these guys in a long time, the mutual love and respect you could see was there. The other thing I loved about making this film is I shot it in 10 days. Usually I spend years making films. So it was just 10 days of pure bliss mainly in Johannesburg. You know, the Paradise Lost series was, 18 years. So to shoot a film in 10 days and then to have it premiere at Sundance 5 months later, that was like a record for me.
It's also got to feel great to you, too, to make a film with a happy ending.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, they don't call me Dr. Darkness for nothing.
The doctor's taking my temperature. It's the treatment. He's Joe Berlinger, his new film, a terrific new film as director, is Under African Skies, a look at the making of the Paul Simon record Graceland. But I find myself really moved by just this power of just sort of positive movement that informs this film, that, you know, you can be a little heedless, but on Simon's behalf and the musician's behalf as well, just that they were determined to move forward with this.
Yeah, no. I mean, there was such a determination to get this record done and out and to go on tour and to combat the criticism. It was a very uniting force. And I think the tour was again, we forget the times that this film is about. I mean, Joseph Shabalala of, you know, the founder of Ladysmith Black Mambazo, the first white person he hugged was Paul Simon. And when he hugged him, as he says in the film, he looked around and thought, oh, no, he's going to go to jail. I mean, that was the country that this guy was coming into, Paul Simon. And the concert that they gave in Zimbabwe, which was kind of the conclusion of the world tour and was an opportunity for South Africans to actually see, the tour and to hear the music. I mean, it was the first time black and white South Africans got together and enjoying something cultural together. They had to do it in another country, Zimbabwe, but this was such a huge cultural force, the record and the tour. And yet it was, even to this day, as we see in the film, Dolly Tombo, who's the founder of Artists Against Apartheid and the son of exiled ANC president Oliver Tambo, believes that it was a mistake for that record to be made. And so what does that say about the power of art and the role of the artist in society?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just was moved, too, by Simon talking at one point about being infected with the racism in the studio. And then at one point, Ray Peary comes in and just starts playing. And he goes, oh, wait a second, this guy's a genius.
Yeah, no, that's that. I love that moment in the film because there's a refreshing honesty. You know, here's, you know, Paul Simon, a privileged white guy from New York. And he admits he was buying into the racism of the studio. One of the assistant engineers who was kind of dissing on one of the performers. And then when Ray Peary came in, who's the founder of a group called Stimella, and he started laying down these licks, Paul realized that these guys were geniuses and admitted that he had kind of fallen for the big South African welcome, as he calls it, which is, you know, to criticize and dehumanize Black South Africans.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a really revelatory moment to hear this guy basically say, well, wait a second, you know, I was buying into racism too, because it was just the default. And it made you feel like some part of him felt like he had to proceed with this just so he could prove these attitudes to be wrong.
You know, he's 70, he's got a lot of success under his belt, and I think a lot of artists would be afraid to open the door to this controversy and to acknowledge some of the things he acknowledges in the film. And I think there's a refreshing honesty in the film. This is actually a film that came to me, as opposed to basically all of my other films are films that I initiated and then sought the financing for. This came to me through Sony, the record label, when they realized that they were happening upon the 25th anniversary of this record and wanted to do something. And I was very worried about doing kind of a Paul Simon puff piece and, you know, a film that would ignore the controversy. And I wasn't sure I wanted to do the film. So Paul and I met and kind of had a very real conversation about what our visions would be for this film and what our expectations would be. And he was very open to and desirous of telling the political side of the record. And I give him a lot of credit because a lot of artists, you know, might not want to open the door to something that could still engender criticism. I mean, for the most part, this film has gotten incredible reviews and incredible attention, but there hasn't been one screening, you know, at a film festival or someplace where one person hasn't stood up and kind of made a speech about, you know, does he regret what he did and should he not have, you know, recorded the record, and does he feel bad? And of course, his answer is he's very proud of what he did and he doesn't feel bad. I'm just saying that, you know, he's opened the door to a second round of criticism, and a lot of artists, I think, would have shied away from that.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to Joe Berlinger. His new film as director is Under African Skies, a look at the recording and the circumstances surrounding the recording of Paul Simon's Graceland album. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. I just feel like this film fits into that thing that we talked about last time. You tend to make films about communities in crisis, and this is very much that. I mean, this really, given that it came to you and that you didn't seek it out, it's kind of incredible to me that it falls in line with all the other films that you've done in that way.
The film came to me as them wanting to do a 25th anniversary about the, you know, the making of the record. You know, I will give myself a little credit, and I pushed it into the arena of wanting to tell the apartheid story. Again, because I have such vivid memories of, I mean, my political awareness as a young man, I trace to the anti-apartheid movement. That was one of the first things that I, you know, as a 21, 22-year-old fresh out of college, really kind of gravitated towards and latched onto and thought was very important. And the fact that my children, when I first talked about making this film, didn't even really know what apartheid was, just, you know, kind of troubled me. And I wanted to remind the world that there was a regime that sought to dehumanize and to take away all the rights of the vast majority of the people. And the world stood up and said, no, this is wrong. And in a relatively short amount of time, ended, you know, the terrible sin of apartheid.
But it's the thing you also do, too. Even the protagonists who are kind of right-minded or have a point of view that should be seen, you force them to ask questions of themselves. I mean, going back to even to Brother's Keeper and to Paradise Lost, these are... You don't let the protagonists who who deserve to be heard and who may be even on the side of the angels, you don't let them off the hook either.
You know, you have to understand the other side. You have to have empathy for the other side if you're ever going to achieve any kind of social justice. And, you know, if you're sitting in an audience watching a movie and you're not sure what the point of view is and you're not being lectured to, you know, when you're lectured to with a very specific point of view, it's a very passive experience for the viewer. And when you're passively being lectured to, it's just not as emotionally engaging. When you are evaluating the pros and cons of a particular argument as an audience member and you're making your own decision, you're coming to your own conclusion about what's right and what's wrong, it's a much more active emotional experience, and therefore at the end of the day it's much more persuasive. You know, there's a certain type of advocacy film that I think is afraid of showing both sides. Anything that deviates from the cause that you're advocating, some filmmakers are afraid to put that in a film. I have just the opposite viewpoint. I want to provoke and prod and make sure that the person who is giving their point of view, you know, is really sure of that point of view and can defend it. And I want the audience to not necessarily agree with every word that's coming out of the protagonist's mouth, because that forces you to be, you know, an active evaluator of that information as an audience member. And when you finally agree with the particular point of view, that is a much more persuasive, I think, filmmaking and audience experience. And by being more of an objective journalist than an advocate in an advocacy film, I think you're being a stronger advocate, because it forces, you're not just preaching to the converted, which I find is the tone of certain advocacy films.
I've always felt like it's for you, it's forcing yourself to ask questions about why you're doing the material in the first place, as much as it is trying to find a new way to engage the audience. It's a way to sort of keep yourself going, asking yourself what this material is about constantly. At least I think that's what you're doing for yourself, is it not?
I love this style of filmmaking. I've been doing it for 25 years. For me, it's, you know, it's a huge opportunity to ask questions. I mean, because you wield a camera, you're able to, you know, go to places and talk to people you don't normally get to talk to. And so I want to use that opportunity responsibly, and I want to use that opportunity really to answer questions for myself about the human condition.
Well, Joe, we're out of time. Thanks so much for doing this. It's always good to have you on the show.
My pleasure. Great to speak to you again.
My guest is Joe Berlinger. His new film as director is Under African Skies. Our recording engineer at KCRW in Santa Monica's J.C. Swadek, who also mixes the show, is edited by my producer, Jenny Rodelet. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I don't have a turnaround jump shot. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.